Today, Saudi Arabia welcomes the release of the 28 pages redacted from the joint inquiry of Congress into the 9/11 events. We have called for the release of these pages from the moment they were redacted. We believed at the time that the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia cannot respond to charges emanating from blank pages. We stated in the clearest terms possible that the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia has nothing to fear, that the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia is determined to go after the terrorists, those who finance them, and those who justify their actions. We were keen on finding out what was in those pages so that we can investigate and prosecute and hold those responsible for any wrongdoing. We hope that with the release of these pages, the aspersions that have been cast against the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia over the past 14 years will come to an end, and we hope that we can focus on moving forward in a cooperative way in order to go after the men, the money, and the mindset that represents a threat to your people and ours. The 9/11 crime is probably the most investigated crime in history. For anyone to think that any leads were not pursued is really unrealistic. The US government agencies, with their tremendous responsibilities, have looked into this and have come to the conclusion that is very clear. There is no Saudi government involvement or involvement by Saudi officials in the events of 9/11. So I don't know what else, how one can be more clear than this.
We'll intervene whenever we decide it's in our national security interest to intervene. And if you don't like it, lump it.
The problem with America is not that we go around marauding around the world imposing ourselves. Mm-hmm. The problem with America in the last 10, 15 years since the end of the Cold War, really in the last 60 years, is that we've been too slow to get involved.
I don't know how many Iraqi civilians were killed, but I can assure you that the number is the absolute minimal that it's possible in modern warfare.
Every nation in every region now has a decision to make. Either you are with us or you are with the terrorists.
That land over there is yours. You'll go back to it one day because your fight will prevail and you'll have your homes and your mosques back again because your cause is right and God is on your side.
Welcome to the dark.
Saudi Arabia welcomes the release of the 28 pages redacted from the joint inquiry of Congress into the 9/11 events. We have called for the release of these pages from the moment they were redacted. We believed at the time that the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia cannot respond to charges emanating from blank pages. We stated in the clearest terms possible that the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia has nothing to fear, that the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia is determined to go after the terrorists, those who finance them, and those who justify their actions. We were keen on finding out what was in those pages so that we can investigate and prosecute and hold those responsible for any wrongdoing. We hope that with the release of these pages, the aspersions that have been cast against the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia over the past 14 years will come to an end, and we hope that we can focus on moving forward in a cooperative way in order to go after the men, the money, and the mindset that represents a threat to your people and ours. The 9/11 crime is probably the most investigated crime in history. For anyone to think that any leads were not pursued is really unrealistic. The U.S. government agencies, with their tremendous responsibilities, have looked into this and have come to the conclusion that is very clear. There is no Saudi government involvement or involvement by Saudi officials in the events of 9/11. So I don't know what else.
Welcome
can be
to another episode of The Dark Endowment. I'm your host, Adam Fitzgerald. New revelations between the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia, Saudi operatives inside the United States, and to two known al-Qaeda operatives, Khalid al-Madar and Nawaf al-Hazmi, who had later hijacked American Airlines Flight 77 that crashed in the Pentagon, have now come to light to the public spectrum. 60 Minutes and Florida Bulldog released breaking reports 3 weeks ago where a newly unsealed video showing Omar al-Bayoumi, a Saudi with connections to the government under employment for the Saudi Ministry of Defense and Aviation, a department headed by Prince Sultan bin Abdulaziz, who is the former defense minister of Saudi Arabia between 1963 to 2011, and the former crown prince of Saudi Arabia between 2005 and 2011. For years, Saudi government denied involvement, even indirectly, with the September 11 attacks that were purported by 19 Islamic fundamentalists. But as we now know, with information that was provided to us by the historical record, by eyewitnesses, and declassified documents show that even more planes were about to be hijacked on that day, thanks to the diligent work of investigators over the past 10 years. So what does this say regarding their involvement, directly or indirectly? And I want you to be very careful about the way I word things. I try to be very careful in what I am implying or directing or even allegating. I am not going to sit here and tell you that the Saudi King Fahd at the time operated, orchestrated the 9/11 attacks. But I will say that the Saudi government, specifically the head of the General Intelligence Directorate, Prince Turki bin Faisal, can no longer say, or the Ministry of Affairs, Jubair, can no longer say there was no involvement between specific Saudi individuals within the kingdom, operatives assisting the hijackers inside the United States. There was now a connection. And according to a 60 Minutes profile, Omar al-Bayoumi, an accused Saudi intelligence operative with close ties to both Khalid Al-Madar and the Waffle Hazmi, is shown in video narrating video that was capturing the images of U.S. Capitol and the Washington Monument in the year 1999. What makes the video so damning is that there are two Saudi emissaries, Mutiyib al-Sudairi and Adel al-Sadhan, in which Omar al-Bayoumi videos both men walking across a road next to a lake. And he calls them the two sheiks walking amongst the rocks. What makes this video so damning is not just the video showing the security procedures of both the Washington Monument, Ronald Reagan International, the airport next to the Washington Monument. This is Ronald Reagan International Airport and the U.S. Capitol, which it's alleged that the United Airlines Flight 93 was going to crash into. Instead, it crashed into a field in Shanksville. Mutiyib al-Sudairi and Adel al-Sadhan are both emissaries sent by a man who was kept hidden by the Department of Justice. A man that was kept classified in the FBI's own Operation Encore files. William Barr, the Department of Justice under the Trump administration, who refused to release these files to law firms like Motley Rice or Creedler & Creedler, who are representing the 9/11 victims' families, inadvertently released the name of a Saudi official by the name of Mu'assad al-Jarrah in one page. Mu'assad Ahmed al-Jarrah is an almost anonymous figure with possible connections to the 9/11 plot, which was not solidly confirmed. However, according to the FBI's own Operation Encore files, which is now public, from Executive Order 14040 under President Biden in 2021, showed that Mouhsen and al-Jarrah did have connections to not just Osama bin Laden and al-Qaeda, but to terrorist operatives in Southeast Asia and the Middle East. Mouhsen al-Jarrah is the man responsible for employing imams in mosques in the United States. He's also alleged to have phone contact with Omar al-Bayoumi and an imam at the King Fahd Mosque in Culver City, Los Angeles, where Khalid al-Mihdhar and Nawaf al-Hazmi were seen in the initial weeks in which they arrived inside the United States, Fahad al-Thumairi. So why? Why was this kept hidden from the public? Because Mutayyab al-Sudairi and Adel al-Sadhan were sent to the United States to oversee Omar al-Bayoumi and Fahad al-Thumairi in the handling of Khalid al-Mihdhar and Nawaf al-Hazmi. Mouhsen al-Jarrah had sent both of those men. The director of the Ministry of Islamic Affairs in Washington, D.C., ladies and gentlemen, is this a coincidence? It very well could be that this elaborate plan called the Plains Operation, allegedly constructed by Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, currently languishing in Guantanamo Bay, waiting for a trial after 21 years, mind you. Where is he? Where is all the rest of them? Is that it? Or did the intelligence services who are monitoring all these men know about the attacks? Did they get enough information where they could have stopped the attacks? Well, I can't go with the former. Nobody knows who had the specific details. And I'm talking about intelligence services like the Israeli Mossad, the Saudi GID, the CIA, the NSA, the FBI. I'm not going to go on air like some of these 9/11 truthers, alleged experts, and claim that Israel, Saudi Arabia, the United States, whether they did it individually or together, planned and orchestrated the 9/11 attacks. I'm not going to be as foolish to say that. I don't want to mislead my audience. But I do want to say that we do have new information that links specific individuals within the United States that had contacts with Saudi officials that have contacts with the Saudi government. This is not speculation. This is a bona fide fact. And how dare the national media, how dare alt-right media, the larger ones, not touch this story, much like they didn't touch the Canestrail documents or the Operation Encore files, save for a few. And while the U.S. government maintained that al-Qaeda acted alone on September 11th, former FBI agent Richard Lambert said that the video shot by Omar al-Bayoumi serves as ever more proof that the terror group had help. And according to Lambert's interview with 60 Minutes, quote, "It is another very large brick in a massive wall of evidence that at this point indicates the Saudi government was complicit in the 9/11 attacks," end quote. So you ask yourself, why was this kept hidden from not just the public, but also from law firms who are currently suing the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia with information this explosive? Could it be that the U.S. policy with Saudi Arabia is interfering with the investigation? Well, to many who dismissed the 9/11 Commission, they seem to think so.
Mr. Woloski, I was focused on your final paragraph. We don't hold the Saudis' feet to the fire. Now, I gather from your testimony that we, the United States, and the countries that are most responsible here, if we had the political will to crack down on financing, we could do it. But because of policy considerations that are very important, we don't do it. We have to have the oil. We have to have the overflight rights. We have to have the basing rights. And because we have to have those things, we do not hold their feet to the fire. Is that your view?
That is my view. Fortunately, I wasn't called before you to testify on policy with regard to Saudi Arabia in the current context of.
No, I appreciate that. I'm not being critical of you in any way. It's just a very good illustration,
sure,
of how policy gets in the way of, in this case, enforcement.
Yes, that's the point of my testimony.
Yeah.
In other words, I'm not here to make judgments over whether or not particular issues should be prioritized over other issues.
I understand.
But what I can tell you is that the United States at the highest levels has not spoken out loudly and forcefully on the terrorist financing issue as it relates to Saudi Arabia. Now, that's not to say that things aren't being done. I have every reason to believe that a lot is being done, but it's being done in the shadows. And the conclusion of the Council on Foreign Relations report was that it was time to bring it out of the shadows for the President of the United States or for other senior officials to state clearly, unequivocally, and unambiguously what was required of the Saudi government on the terrorist financing issue. That is not being done. And in the judgment of this task force, it needed to be done in order to set benchmarks for the Saudis and to communicate, to enable the Saudi government to communicate to its own citizens what type of conduct was and was not acceptable.
And with this, you have a number of loved ones and family members of the deceased within the World Trade Center who now have this information that the State Department cannot refute, cannot hide, but can only ignore so much evidence that shows that Saudi government operatives inside the United States were assisting financially and logistically two known al-Qaeda operatives inside the United States who are also being operated by certain specific individuals within the Saudi government. And just last week, a group of families of 9/11 victims are calling out President Joe Biden and former President Donald Trump for not talking about the video shot by Omar al-Bayoumi casing the U.S. Capitol and the Washington Monument as the terror targets were being planned. Now, remember, this video was shot in 1999. It's alleged also that Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, the mastermind, the alleged mastermind of 9/11, who I happen to think is not Osama bin Laden, also in 1999, in the fall of 99, the summer of fall of 99, had went and chaired a meeting with Osama bin Laden and the military commander, Abu Hafs al-Masri, known as Mohammed Atef, and the second emir of al-Qaeda himself, Dr. Ayman al-Zawahiri, regarding a previous operation, which would have made 9/11 even minuscule in terms of impact and deaths, called the Pachinko Plot, in which he was a part of, and stated that 10 planes should be hijacked and crashed all throughout intercontinental United States. Bin Laden rejected the proposal initially, but said he took interest in the idea, then invited back Khalid Sheikh Mohammed in 99 later on, and agreed to the proposal of using four planes. Now, whether the intelligence services heard about the operation from the Yemen hub, the Al-Qaeda Yemen hub, headed by Ahmed al-Hada, an associate of bin Laden, or whether foreign intelligence like Israel and Saudi Arabia knew about this operation in 1999 because of their own separate or conjoined intelligence operations in monitoring Al-Qaeda and bin Laden. I mean, there was nobody more surveilled in the whole world than Osama bin Laden and Al-Qaeda. In fact, the house in Yemen owned by Ahmed al-Hadi was the most surveilled house in the world. Had they heard about the plane's operation? Had intelligence services knew about certain specifics? Who, what, when, where? And maybe even why? It's all speculation that they had specifics. But what we do know is that foreign intelligence and domestic intelligence were inside the United States in the year 2000-2001, all the way up until the September 11 attacks. So why did we deport the Saudis and Israelis immediately out of the country? Why did certain people in the CIA not testify at the congressional inquiries of the Joint House and the 9/11 Commission? People such as Richard Blee, the station chief at the Bin Laden Issue Station, the head of the Yemen Hub, CIA analyst Michelle Ann Casey, who went by the name Michael Ann Casey, protect her identity. Why were they sent to Afghanistan by the CIA's own director, George Tenet, who was heard talking with James Pavitt, the director of operations within the CIA, where Pavitt tells Tenet that it was a good idea to send them to Afghanistan? Because as you just heard from Lee Wolski in the 9/11 Commission, the U.S. government protects its interests. Members of Brett Eagleson's group, the 9/11 Justice, who I've interviewed before, that includes first responders and survivors, and also family members of those who were killed in the World Trade Center, said at a news conference last Tuesday that they are disappointed with Biden, Trump, and lawmakers that didn't address what the group said were explosive revelations, which they're right. In addition, 9/11 Justice is urging the Saudi Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman to provide justice and closure to the victims and families involved in 9/11 attacks. Ha ha! Here's a man who ordered the beheading of a U.S. journalist in Jamal Khashoggi. He's not going to basically just release everything. Brett Eagleson was heard to be quoted, quote, "We're no longer searching for words of your in our thoughts and prayers. We're no longer looking to be coddled or comforted. We stand here pissed off. And our government has failed to bring us accountability, closure, and justice," end quote. Now, what did the Saudi government say about the Omar Abayomi video? I shit you not. And you just heard Al Jubeir, Adel Al Jubeir, the Minister of State and Foreign Affairs of Saudi Arabia, basically saying he wishes for all of the Joint House inquiry, known as the 28 pages, where it's redacted regarding Saudi government officials and their connects to the 9/11 hijacker, specifically Khalid Al-Badr and Waffa Hazmi. Well, the Saudi government said that they maintain Omar al-Bayoumi's video showing security entrances of the Washington Monument, U.S. Capitol, that the video was nothing more than a tourist video of Washington, D.C. He's talking about plans, and which incidentally just shows two Saudi emissaries sent by Mursad al-Jarrah, who is his eyes and ears to Omar al-Bayoumi and Osama Basnan, who were providing, and Fahad al-Tamari, who were providing financial and logistical support to Khalid al-Badr to Wapazmi. This cannot be a coincidence, folks. This is enough for a civil trial at the very least. And that's what's happening here. And still, the U.S. government won't help in the families in suing the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia. Trump Organization announced last Monday it would construct a Trump Tower in Jeddah, Saudi Arabia. And in partnership with a Saudi-owned developer, the Trump Organization efforts expands its influence into the Middle East because Saudi government under bin Salman promised. And they took the power by force, the King Salman family did. They promised the United States government to crack down on militants and supporting of militants. And this goes all the way back to the mid-1990s. And according to intelligence sources, U.S. government policymakers and law officials, Department of Justice, basically stated that the Saudi Kingdom were indeed providing protection money to Al-Qaeda and bin Laden to not attack the kingdom, because as you remember, one of bin Laden's initial criticisms of the Saudi government, because when Iraq had invaded Kuwait, there was false intelligence that Saudi Arabia would be next. Bin Laden proposed an idea to King Fahd at the time that he would use the Arab-Afghan Mujahideen that just beat the Soviets to protect the kingdom, in which King Fahd had bin Laden house arrested, his passport revoked, his funds from the bin Laden group frozen, and invited the United States to protect Mecca and Medina. And according to the Islamic militants, this enraged bin Laden, and the Saudis knew it. But the Saudis didn't want a problem. They knew that the Arab-Afghan Mujahideen, which later formed groups like Al-Qaeda, Abu Sayyaf in the Philippines, Jemaah Islamiyah in Indonesia, could pose a threat to the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia, who didn't have a certified standing army. This is the reason why they invited the United States to come into the kingdom, to use their military protection against their avowed enemies, who at the time were Iran, Syria, Lebanon, who just happened to be Israel's enemies. I don't know. Coincidence, I guess. But there were certain people within the Saudi kingdom that were sympathizers to bin Laden's cause and wanted the overthrow of the United States and, by extension, the West and Israel. Yet again, the 9/11 Commission brought this idea up. Was there any direct connection between Saudi government officials within the kingdom paying blackmail money to bin Laden and Al-Qaeda?
Let me continue to pursue that line of questioning in a minute. Let me go to Dr. Fondi for a question as well. Sure. Dr. Fondi, a former CIA agent by the name of Robert Baer writes in the May Atlantic Monthly issue that particularly he's concerned about Saudi Arabia's support for fundamentalism and for terrorism abroad. He states in this article many things, but one of them, he claims that the Saudis have transferred $500 million to Al-Qaeda over the past decade. Now, do you think that there is any kind of credibility to a figure like that? How would you be able to track that? And how would you measure the Saudi support with the United States for fighting terrorism prior to 9/11?
To just be absolutely honest, I just don't know this figure. I did not come across this figure. And also the idea of wire transfer or transfer of funds, I can probably say, probably throughout the Arab world, people use cash and not banking systems. So it's very difficult to actually trace it unless the origin of the money came from a Western country, unless there is something that's really... The idea that I haven't seen from my study of Saudi Arabia that people use checks, or even when they use bank deposit, this is not a really a large group of the society. Most people get their salaries in cash. So the idea of wire transfers, with that amount of money has to originate somewhere else. It could have connection to Saudi Arabia.
I think he insinuates, as Dr. Gudaratna did, with respect to Muhammad Jamal Khalifa, that some of the money was funneled through charities and other
things. That's right. I think that's the very central question for really looking at Saudi Arabia, is to look at these charities. And I talked to Saudis about this in interviews, in terms of what do they think of that. And I think sometimes they come off as these are the unintended consequences of bad politics, that somehow they decided to upgrade Saudi Arabia's image in the Muslim world, therefore they tried to help the poor with schools, with other places, not knowing that the ideology as well as the manning of these organizations was hijacked by Al-Qaeda members. So. I have no way of assessing whether this is an honest claim or a dishonest claim, but I would say that probably, given what I know about Saudi Arabia, that this is probably the unintended consequences of bad policy and lack of foresight and long-term planning. You see mosques and other things being supported by Saudi Arabia, even in the United States. But Saudi students use them for 4 years until when they are here, and then they are taken over by other people. So there is no follow-up for these organizations. Well, money from Saudi Arabia went to various groups of the Mujahideen. There was certain cultural support that this is a good thing to fight the Soviet Union. Also, money went to organizations that were fighting in Europe, in Bosnia, to support their Muslim brothers and their co-religionists, if you will, who are embattled in Europe. Yes, a lot of money went into that, but how it's being used and who used it, it is very difficult to actually say that certain money was authorized by, let's say, officials or something of that sort. But certainly there was a sentiment in Saudi Arabia that at the time was encouraging people to support these charities. Now, I think this is a very important issue to think about as we think about probably phase two in the war on terrorism, really sort of drying up these resources, or drying up the swamps, if you will. We are looking at really educational institutions and charities. We are looking at really the software of the Muslim world, if you will. I mean, the hardware and the money and everything else can be looked at very carefully, but the software, the educations, what is in the Muslim world's head, how people are being raised and educated and other things, this is our task, and that requires investigating very carefully educational institutions, investigating very carefully charities, investigating very carefully textbooks, and whatever goes into that bad software, we have to rewrite that software, if you will. And if we don't rewrite it, nobody else will rewrite it.
And with the link between Saudi government officials and terrorist organizations like Al-Qaeda throughout the Southeast Asia and Middle East itself, and with connections inside the United States and Europe, this is no longer a one-off. It's no longer a coincidence. You have a consistency within information, that can be applied to showing that the Saudi government, not the whole of it, but elements within it, have direct connections with terrorist groups around the world. Now, also, 15 months before September 11th, and according to Robin Swan from the Florida Bulldog, wrote an excellent article, which was not covered by much, but they do a fantastic job, that there were phone calls exchanged between a Saudi prince who used a cell phone and a San Diego home of two Al-Qaeda operatives, Khalid Abidar and Nawaf al-Hazmi. The prince, Nawaf bin Saud bin Mohammed bin al-Saud, who had made no previous calls to the house and would never do so again. According to an article, quote, within days, the hijackers, along with a friend, would drive 2 hours north to Los Angeles, where they would repeatedly meet with a Saudi consular official. The FBI had called a close contact of the 9/11 hijackers support network, and that person was Fahad Al-Tamir. End quote. Now, according to the article, again, quote, the FBI came to think the prince or a brother who was with him in Los Angeles, Prince Mateeb bin Saud bin Mohammed bin al-Saud, held the key to unlock this troubling episode. And as Florida Bulldog first reported in February 2022, FBI records about Operation Encore, ordered declassified by President Biden in 2021, show that starting in 2007, agents sought repeatedly to obtain then-director Robert Mueller's approval to question the two princes who they believe might have helped them identify the unknown man in the LAX video, which shows Khalid Abidar, Nawaf al-Hazmi, Modar Abdullah, and one person taking video shot from his waist at a security checkpoint. However, they never received that permission, nor has the suspicious LAX video ever been released to the public, despite FBI agents' pleas to higher-ups that it would be widely shown to help identify this person known as the unsub or unsubstantiated unknown subject. But Florida Bulldog learned that the LAX video was recently provided to attorneys for the 9/11 plaintiffs who are suing Saudi Arabia in federal court. It remains under seal, subject to an FBI protective order that continues to veil much evidence in the case, end quote. So there we have more connections between a Saudi government official and two Saudi government operatives who are providing the assistance to Khalid Abidar Nawaf al-Hazmi while living in Los Angeles and San Diego. Now, there's a lot to be said about Omar al-Bayoumi. And according to the Canestrillo documents, the CIA had an open file of Omar al-Bayoumi during the early 1990s. Why? How is this not a bombshell? How is this not reported by our legacy media or by old media? I mean, very few besides the Gray Zone and Kit Clarenberg. Very few people covered this. Now they'll just give you the short rundown about Omar al-Bayoumi, who are new to this channel. In August of 1994, Omar al-Bayoumi moved to the United States and settled in San Diego, California, where he became involved in the local Muslim community. According to those who knew him, he was perceived as being very inquisitive. He was known to carry around a video camera. And according to the same several sources, Omar al-Bayoumi was also strongly suspected by many residents as a Saudi government spy. Even Nawaf al-Hazmi, one of the 9/11 hijackers of Flight 77 told a man who was renting rooms to him, Abdus Sutter Sheikh, who just happened to be an FBI informant for the last 30 years in San Diego. Coincidence? Nawaf Fahadli even said that Omar al-Bayoumi, he thought was a spy. So even if the intelligence services thought they were doing a good job of monitoring these people, well, they were fucking up. Because even one of the hijackers thought Omar al-Bayoumi was a spy. So that means he was careful about what he was saying. Even though Khalid al-Midar, who left for Yemen and came back in the summer of 2001, was working at a gas station in La Mesa, California called Stan Start Mart, and told associates there that to be on the lookout for a big event soon. And why would he be talking about this? Were they very careful? I mean, if they were this irresponsible, just think and be careful of what I'm saying here, because it's speculation. If they were this irresponsible, what do you think the intelligence services knew about these two men and the other 9/11 hijackers? We're talking about the Israeli art students who were living in close proximity to the hijackers all throughout the Southwest and Northeast. We're talking about Saudi intelligence who are monitoring Khalid al-Midar, Nawaf Fahadli, and later Hani Hanjour in San Diego and Los Angeles. And of course, the CIA and the NSA listening to the phone calls, following the people out of the Yemen hub. You want to talk about data? Well, according to the FBI, the NSA, and the CIA, we didn't have enough manpower. We need more money. We need expansion. And we need to liquidate civil liberties slowly in order to be successful in protecting the country from terrorism when they had probably enough information to stop the 9/11 attacks. I'm convinced it can make a great argument that the NSA, who had the most data of anybody, because they were monitoring bin Laden satellite phones in the early 1990s, which they found out about the number of the house in Yemen, and they put a bug. I mean, they were listening to the phone calls and getting all the transcripts of the people talking on those phones. What do you think they were talking about, ladies and gentlemen? Use your head. Plenty of conspiracy with the 9/11 attack. Now, let's go back to Mu'assed al-Jar. And to what we know about Mu'assed al-Jar, who is the man heading this operation inside the United States with Saudi government officials, and maybe, just maybe, and I'll be careful here, with his connections to al-Qaeda and the planes operation. I'm not saying he was involved. I don't have evidence of that. But where there's smoke, there's fire. Mu'assed al-Jar, who started in the mid-1990s, worked as the deputy chief of the Islamic Affairs section and the Saudi embassy in Washington, D.C. He actually left the United States in 2005 after coming FBI scrutiny because of his suspected ties to Saudi government officials and al-Qaeda as well. He also was accosted by the FBI due to his pedophile porn stash. That's right. Sky had pictures of underage girls and boys, probably, on his computer. Why'd they let him go? But Jara, he continued to work until recently in the Saudi Foreign Service and apparently seconded from a major Islamic university in Riyadh that had long been his primary employer. The institution was the Imam Muhammad Ibn Saud University, which he had been a member of the kingdom's Wahhabi theology. Bingo! Wahhabi theology is what made the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia and also the ideology behind al-Qaeda and Islamic State in Levant and Abu Sayyaf and Jemaah Islamiyah, Boko Haram, and you name it. That's why these groups exist, because of the Wahhabi theology. Mullah said, drew intense criticism from U.S. intelligence agencies inside the United States after 9/11 because through the FBI's own Operation Encore investigation, Mullah said Al-Jarrah was said to have connections with bin Laden and Al-Qaeda. I'm not making this up. I don't need to. It's for the public record. Now, according to Operation Encore Files, and I'll read you the quote from the file itself. This is the FBI, mind you. Quote, Mullah said Al-Jarrah may be trying to bring other Saudi Sunni Salafi extremists inside the United States through his position at the embassy. Al-Jarrah's official responsibilities are to manage and control all assignments of Saudi imams, clerics, into the United States and facilitate the issuance of diplomatic visas to these individuals, like Fahad Al-Tamari, who met with Khalid Al-Midar and Nawab Al-Hazmi, and then later on met with Omar Al-Bayoumi on the day that Al-Bayoumi was seen at a restaurant in Los Angeles. Out of the thousands of restaurants, he met Khalid Al-Midar and Wapahan. Let's get back to the file. Saudi imams who are assigned to the United States through this process report to Al-Jarrah, and he serves as the coordinator of their activity while they are inside the United States. Al-Jarrah is purposely selecting Saudi Salafi, also known as Wahhabi extremists, to be assigned to the United States. Al-Jarrah, by the way, his name is redacted here. Al-Jarrah travels in and around the United States, visiting the Saudi imams under his control. And it should be noted that Al-Jarrah is listed as an accountant for the embassy on the U.S. Department of State's diplomat list. How about that? So, when the emissaries Adel al-Sadan and Muteb al-Sadari entered the United States, they came to Muwassad al-Jarrah. And they came to facilitate the arrival of Khalid al-Midar and Nawab al-Hazmi from Malaysia. And according to the same FBI Encore document, there was an FBI source inside the mosque who overheard a phone call from a man in Malaysia to none other than Fahad al-Tamari, the imam who was hired by Muwassad al-Jarrah, that they are to expect the arrival of two brothers, Islamic brothers, not paternal brothers, and that they are to basically help with the assistance of these two men. In comes Adel al-Sadan and Muteb al-Sadari through the invitation of Muwassad al-Jarrah, who acted as his eyes and ears regarding their assistance to Fahad al-Tamari, Omar al-Bayoumi, who were providing assistance to Khalid al-Midar and Nawab al-Hazmi. Now, I could sit here and basically say that all of this is a coincidence. You have that 1% chance that it very well could be. But then there's the problem of the United States keeping this a secret. Now, why would the U.S. government do that? Why wouldn't they basically allow for all the information, which shows a big coinkydink, that Saudi government operatives and the 9/11 hijackers just happened to meet that year and didn't know that they were Al-Qaeda and wanted to help these two men? Well, according to those people within the King Fahd Mosque, FBI officials basically interviewed many of these people and said, had Omar al-Bayoumi ever helped young Saudi men who are entering the United States with renting them an apartment, helping them set up a driver's license, helping them set up a bank account? And wouldn't you know it? Ha! No. He was very frugal with his money. But yet, this man who didn't have a job, who was a ghost employee of a company called Dala Avco, which just so happens to have connections with Osama bin Laden and the Saudi government, another coincidence, right? That Omar al-Bayoumi was getting a stipend when the hijackers arrived inside the United States, and that stipend ended when they were gone on September 11, 2000. Another coincidence. Hey. Well, I'm not a coincidence theorist. I'm not a fringe conspiracy theorist. I'm a simple guy who reads information, analyzes data through the scientific method in providing the public and my grateful audience, I'm so grateful for them, who still follow this subject intently. I like to provide them information and not speculation, because information is power. And power comes responsibility. And what we need to do is basically use the information to maybe one day hold people responsible through malfeasance or even maybe complicity in helping these attacks to be successful. But we don't have that specific information just yet. Maybe we won't get it at all. But my message to you is to basically not be in a rush to judgment. This is why a lot of people who call themselves 9/11 investigators fail, because they want to blame Israel, or they want to blame Saudi Arabia, or they want to blame the CIA or the Bush administration for orchestrating and planning the attacks. Very foolish of them to do this. Do you really think the president of the United States at the time, George Bush, who's an ear imbecile, who's always in front of a camera, you're going to let him know about all the specifics involving the 9/11 operation? I would surmise as saying the foreign intelligence services and the domestic intelligence services, who are not in front of a camera, who are not even public, their names are not even known, barely, would know certain specifics. Because in order for these attacks to be successful, a lot had to go right through immigration and naturalization services. Well, what happened in the summer of 2000? We had the Visa Express program. What was that? U.S. consular officials in Riyadh and Jeddah basically didn't review applications that weren't finished, and or applications that came from Saudi Arabia, which were passed directly through approval for a U.S. visa without any face-to-face meetings. What about the airline industry? There was threats to airliners back in 1995 through the Pachinko plot, which was known to the FBI, which was known to the Federal Aviation Administration, known to the CIA. Were there any stricter security measures involving cockpits? No. The State Department, were they aware that there was a threat inside the United States using planes as weapons? Maybe. Well, why didn't they take action then? Why didn't they pressure Saudi Arabia to crack down on militancy? There's a lot of more questions than answers. But these are the questions we should be asking. And so, with that being said, I would suggest to you, those who are listening, to be very thorough, to be very careful, to build channels of your own, maybe write an article, a short summary. If you don't like the way you look or the way you sound, like I do, Just remember that it's not about you. It's about the information in your head, which is valuable. Everybody can have an opinion. That's what a speculation is. But not everybody has information. And with the very, very little information I have regarding this broad subject, I am hoping that I can reach enough young people to basically spread awareness to this incident that changed our lives and changed the world, and hopefully hold certain people accountable. Because without that, we're a doomed society that will ultimately fail spiritually, morally, humanely, and allow evil to permeate within the every essence of humanity and fabric of society. I'm your host, Adam Fitzgerald, Dark and Dour. Thank you very much for listening, and see you in the next episode.